Thank you for joining us here today at Calvary Church, where we are committed to loving God and loving people. If you have any questions or want to learn more about who we are, visit us online at calvary.ca. Now let's check out this week's message.
Good morning. And I got a couple people. Good morning. All right, and again, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. I don't know what your plans are, whether you have a big gathering, a little gathering, a big meal, or McDonald's, but happy Thanksgiving. I will tell you this, I had a big feast yesterday already at the hands of my mother-in-law, so it's always amazing. Big feast, a lot of fun, some new friends that joined us, but we were also missing some regulars at our Thanksgiving meal because for many years now, we've actually invited Pastor Steve and his family to join us for some of the bigger family gatherings around the calendar year because their family is all out east. But they were missing this year, but for good reason, because for the first time, I think he said in 4 years, they were able to go to Halifax and spend Thanksgiving with their family out there. So we're very excited for them that they get to do that. It has been a long time since that they've been able to. And so Pastor Steve did connect with me and wanted to wish all of you a happy Thanksgiving as well. Now, even though they went out there to be with family, Pastor Steve actually ministered this morning at one of our churches in Halifax. So they're a few hours ahead. Hopefully by now he's done, full of turkey, and napping on somebody's couch. That's where we hope he is right now. Pastor Steve, if you're watching online, happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy your vacation. Say hi to your family. Everything's good here. We'll explain the fire in the youth room when you get back. It's all under control. Not too long ago, I attended a Christian concert, and they did something at the beginning of the concert that I'm going to do this morning, just because I thought it was fun. And so they're coming into town. They don't know who's come out. Like, they want to kind of get to know the audience, and they used music to get to know the audience. So I'm going to do that again this morning. I mean, I know a lot of you. I've at least met most of you, and if I haven't, I'd love to meet all of you at once. Hi, my name is Mark. Nice to meet you. So I'm going to play a few song clips, and here's your job this morning. I'm going to play just a clip, and I'm going to press pause. And if you know the song, I want you to be singing along, because when I press pause, I want to hear if you know the next line of the song. And this way, you know, based on the songs I've chosen, I'll kind of go, oh, it's this type of crowd this morning. All right. So I'm the kids pastor. We're going to start with a Sunday school type song. But if you know it, sing along, and then I want to hear you belting it out. Goes like this. Is this working?
I am a C. I am a
C. You ready? What's the next line?
I am a
C-H-R-I-S-T-I-A. Yes! This is going to be a good morning. Okay, I got another one. We'll do a few here. How about this one? Oops, there we go.
And friends of friends forever.
Come on, you guys. What's the next line? Oh, you guys are such good sports. Okay, I got another one. This one, I think some of you are going to get all smiley and tingly just at the intro to this song. So it goes like this. See? So we're going to give you the first line. I'm counting on you for the second line. You ready?
When he rolls up his sleeves, he ain't just putting on the Ritz.
All right. Okay, I'm going to keep going because this is, you know what? In fact, we're going to cancel the message and just do this for a half an hour. Okay, here, how about this one? Here we go. I don't know if I should be disappointed or really happy with that. That Pastor McDonald, there was a word prayer in that song. It's all good. Okay. Two more. This one I'm going to give you like 2 seconds at the most. See if you can jump right in. Here we go.
You're a good, good.
Okay. Last one. Oh, actually. Okay. Bonus one. Let's stop it. This one, I'm going to add a bonus one here. Let's get a little current here. Okay, here, this one. You guys should not be admitting this stuff. All right, we started with a Sunday school song. We're going to end with a Sunday school song. It goes like this. Zacchaeus was a wee little man. This is the best morning ever. All right, well, at least you knew that last song, because we're gonna use that. If some of you are visiting for the first time, you're like, what is going on? I knew two of those songs, maybe only one of those songs. Some of those songs go way back that if you weren't a child decades ago in church, you might not recognize at all. But so some of those songs, like I Am a Sea and Zacchaeus Was a Wee Little Man, were sung on loop as a kid in Sunday school. So no matter how many decades have gone by, they are up there to stay, like it or not. Just be grateful I didn't get to Father Abraham. He'd be singing that all day long. Just the mention, you might still be singing all day long. So that last one was about Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is a real person in the Bible that we're going to talk about this morning. We're going to hear his story, read his story. As we continue on in our good work series, this morning we're going to talk about the fact that each of us have a good work to do through God's calling on our life. And the hope is that we'll be challenged to find our purpose, that we'll be able to talk about the opposition that comes up, and we'll also be able to deal with or find the tools we need to help live out that calling. Our sort of theme verse for this unit is Nehemiah 2:18, short and sweet. It says, "Let us start rebuilding." So they began this good work. And we know that God wants to do a good work in our lives. So Zacchaeus is going to be our example as we talk today, and we're going to start by just reading the story of Zacchaeus. It goes like this, Luke chapter 19, it's only 10 verses long. Jesus entered Jericho, made his way through the town. There was a man there named Zacchaeus. He was the chief tax collector in the region, and he had become very rich. He tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree beside the road, for Jesus was going to pass that way. When Jesus came by, he looked up at Zacchaeus and called him by name. "Zacchaeus," he said, "quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today." Zacchaeus quickly climbed down and took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. But the people were displeased. "He's gone to be the guest of a notorious sinner," they grumbled. Meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, "I will give half my wealth to the poor, Lord. And if I have cheated people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much." Jesus responded, "Salvation has come to this home today, for this man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save those who were lost." Now, sometimes we associate these Bible stories with Sunday school, these quick little stories with kids' church. And it's understandable that we do that because kids connect so well with stories, right? They want stories in the morning, stories before bed, sometimes just to stall. They want more stories. But we aren't as quick to admit that we all connect with stories. You connect with people by them just telling you their story. Stories have life applications. That's why the Bible is filled with them. It's why Jesus used stories and parables. This story of Zacchaeus is not a parable told by Jesus, though. This is a real event that is recorded in the book of Luke. Now, the book of Luke, some of you might know this, but it's the most interesting of the Gospels to me because of why and how it was written. The book of Luke was authored by Luke, but the cool thing about it is that Luke was actually commissioned to write this by a Christian named Theophilus. He asked Luke to write this down. Luke was a physician. He was actually Dr. Luke, and so we already know he was educated, and so he was investigative, he was thorough, and so he was asked to do this. He accepted the job. He set out with the task of exploring the records that already existed, like the Gospel of Mark, but also to push further and investigate and to ask the questions, and he did that. He did his own investigation. He interviewed people and witnesses so that he could compile and write this new account that would establish for any interested parties what was actually certain and for sure in the Christian for the Christians who were instructed in this. And like the other Gospels, of course, Luke talked and wrote about the life of Jesus.
So I want to set a little bit of background for this story about Zacchaeus, because this is Jesus as he's coming into Jericho. This is Jesus actually on his way to Jerusalem. This is right before the very well-documented final week of Jesus' life here on earth. And in this section of Luke, there's a few stories interspersed with Jesus' teaching. It's like parable and little story and teaching and another story. And every one of those stories is Jesus interacting with someone. There's these little moments with Jesus and regular life people. So this story is, of course, about the meeting of Jesus and Zacchaeus, who, as we read, is arguably the most notorious of sinners, is what it said. But I think it's so interesting that Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem, and Jesus knows what's coming up next week. This is a big week. He's thinking about it. There's ridicule coming. There's torture coming. There's crucifixion and death coming. And yet Jesus decides to spend this time with this guy, Zacchaeus. And the reason they referred to him as this notorious sinner was that Zacchaeus was a tax collector. And I'm not throwing shade on a specific occupation or trying to give a bad name to tax collecting, but you have to kind of understand what it meant to be a tax collector at that place at that time, because tax collectors were hated. They were despised. Not that we're madly in love with Revenue Canada, but they were really hated back then. Rome was who Zacchaeus essentially worked for. Now, Rome was the conquerors, right? They would conquer an area, and then they would give the job of tax collector basically to the highest bidder who was local there. And so Zacchaeus was the one that took that job. And the way Rome orchestrated it was is if you were a tax collector, you would collect all the taxes from everybody, the required amount, that would get sent to Rome. But your salary was whatever you claimed from these people on top of that. Whatever you demanded that was higher than the taxes, that was yours to keep. It was encouraged. So not only had Zacchaeus sort of sided with the conquering enemy, so to speak, but he was also getting rich from cheating and stealing from his own people, his own community, above and beyond what they were required to pay. So to really emphasize that, it says that Zacchaeus was the chief tax collector. So most likely he had been doing it the longest, and most likely he was also collecting more than anyone, which is why he was so hated. So why would he do that? Why would anybody do that? Why would you choose to take a role that's against your own people and choose to be hated? We don't really know. And I don't love. We don't really know. I want to know. Like, why did he do this? There's a popular trend in movie making right now, which is doing the backstory of a villain that's already known. You know, from like Disney's Maleficent, they tell her story, why she had become so evil. And even most recently, there's a backstory to Batman's The Joker that's like, here's his whole life story and why he became this evil character. And they do that because they try to explain or sometimes justify or bring empathy to that villain, right? Maybe if you know their story and what they've been through, you'll feel for them. You'll feel sorry for them. So, you know, Zacchaeus being this sort of villain character in today's story, what was his backstory? We don't know. I mean, he wasn't born evil. Nobody's born evil, right? His parents weren't holding newborn baby and saying, oh, look at him. You know what? One day when you get older, you're going to be mean. We're going to call you Chucky. No, they didn't do that. They held him. They're probably, look at his cute little chubby face. We're going to call you Zacchaeus. And what I didn't know until, I feel like I just dropped baby Zacchaeus. What I didn't know until this week, or if I did know, I forgot about, was Zacchaeus, in its original language, translated means pure and clean and righteous. This notorious sinner's name means clean. So how did he get called that and get so far off track with how he led his life? The one thing we know about Zacchaeus is he's notable as being, Zacchaeus was a wee little man. He was little. We don't know exactly how little. We don't know if medically he had dwarfism or if he was just short. We don't know if he was Peter Dinklage or Danny DeVito. We have no idea. Both of which would be phenomenally cast in the Rise of Zacchaeus backstory movie that they're making, or I wish they were making. But the one thing we know about him is he's short. So maybe his backstory is that he was just bullied because of his height. Maybe as a kid, he was just teased, maybe beat up just because a bigger kid could. Maybe as a teenager, he was made fun of, ignored, picked on, thrown in the locker at school, one of the half lockers at school, because they could. Maybe as an adult, he was just constantly rejected, still made fun of, never found love from any woman. And so perhaps after a life of ridicule over his height and being different, maybe this opportunity from Rome was this moment where he could finally have sweet revenge and find authority over his entire community. It's like, I'll show you. Maybe he was compensating for his small stature by being a big man in greed and power. Maybe. So Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the place to be at the time. It is the hub. It is a rich city. It is a big deal. But also at the same time, Jesus is a big deal. And that's easy for us to think of now, Jesus being this big deal, because we're still talking about him 2,000 years later. But this is 3 years into his ministry, and he is famous. When he came into town, everybody wanted to see Jesus. His reputation had preceded him. As he comes into Jericho, they're like, oh, this is the guy. He's here. They would line the streets just to get a glimpse of him, like a one-man parade. And you can kind of picture that scenario. You can picture the crowd yelling just to get him to look their way, or yelling to come over here, touch me, heal me. They're probably talking to each other. This is the guy we've been talking about. The guy, I heard he healed a lame man, made him walk again. Yeah, well, I heard he gave sight to a blind person. I heard he raised someone from the dead. What, that guy? This is the guy. They're going crazy. Everybody wanted to take a peek at this rock star coming to town. And I'm not belittling Jesus by calling him a rock star. That is the impact that he had on people. They know, they've heard the stories of this miracle-working man. They've heard the stories of this wise teacher, and when he speaks, thousands gather, and they want to see them. I can imagine lining the road, turning their back, like Jesus walking down the road, and they're facing away from him with papyrus and a quill just to get a selfie with him in the background. All right, that's stupid. So as Jesus comes into Jericho, Zacchaeus is no different. Zacchaeus just wants to see the guy that everybody's talking about. Verse 3 again, really quickly, says, he tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd. So he runs ahead, climbs a tree, because he knows Jesus is coming that way. Now, if we assume the backstory that I just completely made up, even though he had made himself a very rich man, even though he had risen to this authority, even though he had probably instilled fear in people, especially if he was walking up the walk to your house on collection day or however it worked, in this moment, once again, he just can't see over the crowd, and once again, he's just too short. So no matter what status he had obtained with his occupation, in this moment, he's just a little guy climbing a tree. Look that way, watch Jesus. Struggle. I'm sure he didn't love having a spotlight shone on him again on his one personal and physical deficiency. But here's a little guy climbing a tree. And what does it say? When Jesus came by, he looked at Zacchaeus, called him by name. Zacchaeus, quick, come down. I'm going to be a guest in your home today. And Zacchaeus jumps down, takes him to his house. I want to make 3 points this morning as we review this story of Zacchaeus again. And the first one is this. There is no exception to his acceptance. Talking about Jesus. A bit of a tongue twister. There's no exception to his acceptance. Now, we might look at this and go, I love this about Jesus. He's always reaching out to the little man, pulling him in and embracing him, and we like that. We talked about it 2 weeks ago in the At the Movie series with The Greatest Showman, how we're pulling people out of the shadows, the marginalized and the victimized. But Zacchaeus was not marginalized, at least not anymore. He wasn't a victim of the system. He's running the system. He's enforcing this system. And it's easy for us to have the warm fuzzies when we think of Jesus reaching the poor and the lonely and the marginalized and the victimized. But we don't have the same feeling all the time when we realize he's just reaching out to this rich mobster thief named Zacchaeus. It's harder to go, poor and lonely, okay, but this evil villain, I don't know. But there's no exception to Jesus' acceptance. And too often we think that God's acceptance is based on what we have done or what we haven't done, right? We look at analyze is the word I'm looking for, at what we've done in our own life. But yet here's Jesus accepting a man who, at least indirectly, is financing the murders of his own people. Like, you don't have to dig too far into history to see how Rome conquered and what they did to oppress and how they ran things. And tax collectors provided Rome with the money and the backing and the support to continue their reign and the oppression of whoever they were conquering. Yet Jesus accepted him. If you've ever found yourself thinking that God can't love you because of what you've done in your life or with your life, you're wrong. But also, if you think God must love me because what I've done in my life or with my life, you're wrong. Because either way, you're thinking more like the crowd in the story than the way Jesus thinks. This is what verse 7 says about the crowd. But the people were displeased. He's gone to be the guest of a notorious sinner. They're grumbling. They're upset. They're freaking out. Out of everybody that Jesus could have met, why did he pick Zacchaeus? This guy's awful. They would have been so much happier if Jesus had arranged to meet the most pious religious leaders. They at least would have understood and go, okay, that's all right. Why didn't Jesus, you know, send a team ahead to gather resumes, to find the right person, to find the person who was born into a godly home? He was dedicated as a baby at the temple. He got straight A's through school. He helped in Sunday school. He kept himself pure until marriage, memorized scripture, never lied, never smoked, never attended a Halloween dance. But he chose Zacchaeus. Whether we understand it, whether we like it, whether we get it, there is no exception to his acceptance. Which is why we have verse 8. Meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I'll give half my wealth to the poor, Lord, and if I've cheated anyone, I'll pay back four times as much. I tried to look to see what the legality of that was in those days, and from what I could find is, if you were a thief and you got caught, to make things right, you had to pay back what you stole plus 20%. If you were a thief that stole $100, legally you would be required to pay $120 to make it right. But Zacchaeus is going, no, if I stole $100 from you, I'm going to pay you back $400. And I don't know if you've ever had something stolen from you. I think everybody's had something stolen, small or large. I remember once coming downstairs to go into the garage to go to work, and there was no car in that garage. There was the night before, but somebody had helped themselves to my car and were now gone. And do you know how much I wish that that thief had the same conviction that Zacchaeus had? That the next day he's like, dude, I'm so sorry. Here's four cars. How great would that be? With anything, imagine if something got stolen, you'd be a little less sad if things got stolen if you know you're getting four back. And I know someone's going, that guy stole my girlfriend. Not that. Material things, you're not getting four. Come on, this is church. Second main point for this morning is there is no backstory that can't be used for ministry. So Zacchaeus' supervillain backstory led to years and years of stealing and cheating from his own people, getting rich in this opportunistic method through Rome. He was proud, he was haughty, and he was hated. But when his life changed, what must that have been like for that community? Can you picture it? Like, he's made this change, he's told Jesus, I'm going to make things right, and now he's going door to door to pay back four times what he's stolen. I can picture people in their home. Zacchaeus is coming up the walk. Hi, pretend you're not here. Pretend we're not here. Pretend we're not here. Shh. He knows we're here. Open the door. And for the first time, there's Zacchaeus standing there with a smile. And he just says, so there's been a reassessment. And it turns out you have a tax refund. And hands them money. That would have been a first. And he would have made the rounds doing that, and he would have started to change. Not just that, but he was the chief tax collector, so he would have affected the tax collectors beneath him and changed the entire region by this. I kind of picked, have you seen the Christmas classic Scrooge, where Ebenezer Scrooge has this kind of conversion experience, and he's just bubbling, he's bursting with joy and kindness, and he wants to give, 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 and I kind of picture Zacchaeus like that, like half of him is head held down, remorseful, looking for the words to apologize, but the other half is just like, oh, so excited with this newfound freedom when he lets kindness reign within. This conversion of Zacchaeus would have affected the entire area. So the question is, what is your backstory? Is your backstory enough that you feel like you have no hope? Or maybe like Zacchaeus, your backstory has legitimately become your identity. You're like, no, this is who I am. I don't think I can change. It's too big. If that's how you're thinking, that's very short-sighted. Sorry, Zacchaeus, no pun intended. Short-sighted. It's just a little joke. Really? Groans. I'm not looking down on short people. Was that one too low? Okay. That's all I got. Let's go back to verse 6 for a minute because there's something that to me was just glaring. So really quickly, verse 6, Zacchaeus climbs down, takes Jesus to his house. Verse 7, people are grumbling, they're so upset. Verse 8, meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I'm going to give it all back. Does anybody else see the huge part of the story that's just missing and not written? Like, what happened in that house? What did Jesus say to Zacchaeus to initiate such an abrupt about-face to change him so much? It's not there. It doesn't describe the steps that Jesus took or what he said to him, how he got through to Zacchaeus. Come on, Dr. Luke. You're supposed to fill in the gaps here, do some question and answer. You didn't interview anybody and ask what happened in Zacchaeus' house. We just don't know. It just goes from takes Jesus home. He's all better. Everything's good. He's happy. He's repentant. He's changed. Here's why I think it's probably good that it doesn't explain what happened when they went to Zacchaeus' house. We are such suckers for methodology that if it just told the story, like, well, when they got there, you know, Jesus pulled out the chair for Zacchaeus and Zacchaeus sat down and then they had a drink of water, we'd be like, okay, so to be saved, you've got to pull the chair out for somebody. We don't. It just says that he was changed. In fact, the last two verses says, Jesus responded, salvation has come to this home today, for this man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and save those who are lost. Now, not only is that missing, but verse 9 used to kind of bug me. Salvation has come. Well, why? Why is Zacchaeus saved? Especially with that missing information. Like, it can't be because Zacchaeus was now repaying everyone. It can't be that. We know we can't buy our salvation. It doesn't come through the good works we do or the good deeds we do. We can't earn it. Salvation is only ever a gift through grace. So why is Zacchaeus saved? I think that most of us are probably pessimistic when we think of what does God think of me? Because we think, well, I've messed up so many times. And at some point you go, I've messed up too many times. God must have a limit, kind of like a three strikes and you're out. Like, I'm there. There's no way God can accept me. Now, I have a pretty eclectic taste in music. I listen to a lot of genres of music, but one genre of music that I struggle with, I have such a hard time with, is country music. I'm sorry, whoever that was, Shin. I'm sorry. It's hard. It's a struggle. Like, I need no more information about trucks and camouflage hats. I'm good. But I do have a soft spot for Kenny Rogers. And that's because I have these childhood memories of my dad playing Kenny Rogers the Gambler on cassette in the car as we drove around. I know every word of that album. And so I'll allow Kenny Rogers, I think. So in the vein of thinking, you know, three strikes you're out or feeling like we've done too much wrong to be accepted by God, I want to read you, not to get too spiritual, but I want to read you lyrics to a Kenny Rogers song called The Greatest. And it goes like this. Little boy in a baseball hat stands in the field with his ball and bat, says, I am the greatest player of them all. Put his bat on his shoulder and he tosses up the ball. And the ball goes up and the ball comes down and he swings his bat all the way around. The world's so still he can hear the sound. The baseball falls to the ground. Now the little boy doesn't say a word, picks up his ball, he is undeterred, says, I'm the greatest there has ever been, and he grits his teeth and he tries again, and the ball goes up and the ball comes down, and he swings his bat all the way around. The world's so still, he can hear the sound, the baseball falls to the ground. He makes no excuses, he shows no fear, he just closes his eyes and listens to the cheers. Little boy, he adjusts his hat, picks up his ball, stares at his bat, says, I am the greatest, the game is on the line, and he gives his all one last time. And the ball goes up when the moon's so bright, and he swings his bat with all his might, and the world's so still as still can be, and the baseball falls, and that's strike three. And it's like, oh, poor little kid, this is such a sad story. And I told you that verse 9 bugged me, that when it said that salvation had come to his home, because we don't know what Zacchaeus said or did, that part of the story is missing. And then it hit me. Salvation didn't happen through a conversation in that home. And salvation didn't happen in a four-step booklet that Jesus brought with him to share with Zacchaeus in that home. Salvation physically walked into that home. It might as well read, instead of salvation came to this home today, it might as well say Jesus came to this home today. When we feel like we've had our three strikes and we're out, when we feel hopeless, when we think that, man, if I had all this to do over again, I would do it so differently. I would make way less mistakes. I wouldn't strike out so that I could come before God more easily. Let's look at the third main point. We don't need a second chance. We need a Savior. We don't need another chance up to bat where we're going to do things right, not striking out. We just need an encounter with Jesus. Jesus saw Zacchaeus in that tree that day, and he didn't see him for all the things he had done or how many times he had done it, but he saw him for who he was called to be. In fact, he reminded him. He called him, hey, Zacchaeus. You remember what it means? Zacchaeus means clean, pure, righteous. While Zacchaeus was still in the tree, Jesus reminded him of who he was called to be. Salvation is not a process, or it's not a set of steps. Put super simply, salvation is Jesus. Now, technically, I didn't finish that Kenny Rogers song. So I want to read the last four lines. So this little boy, he's missed the ball three times, striking out, all is lost. This is how it ends. Now it's supper time and his mama calls. Little boy starts home with his bat and ball, says, I am the greatest, that is a fact. But even I didn't know I could pitch like that. So instead of viewing as a strikeout, he's viewing himself as the pitcher who struck out the batter. God is not focused on your mistakes and your failures. You are. God is focused on your calling, and he's focused on your potential. And I want you to listen today, because today salvation has come to this house. On this Thanksgiving weekend, if there's anything to be thankful for, it's this, that God knows your calling and God knows your name. Right now, if you sit here and you're listening and you've not had a life-changing encounter with Jesus, if you don't have a relationship with God through his son, Jesus, then today, listen, because today he is calling your name. Your backstory doesn't matter. Today, salvation has come to your house. In a few minutes, we're going to have a prayer time up at the front. And when that happens, if you want to know what it's like to have salvation enter your home, I want you to be bold. I want you to come up to one of our prayer partners, one of our small group leaders, and I want you to just say, please introduce me to Jesus. If you've come with somebody today, if somebody has invited you to church, I want you to lean over them and go, I think I just heard my name. Because God is calling your name. Let's pray. God, we thank you so much for this morning, for the privilege of being able to gather and just talk about your word. We know that that's not a freedom everybody has, and God, we just give you the glory for that. Right now, as we think of this simple story of Zacchaeus and his encounter with Jesus, Father, I pray for any individual here this morning that has heard these words and has not had that life-changing experience by just meeting Jesus, that would happen right here, right now, this morning, that they would talk to somebody and pray together as they would begin a relationship with Jesus today. God, remind us that there is nothing in our backstory, there's nothing that we've done that can keep you from loving us, that your acceptance truly is without fail. God, we come to you. We give you all the glory. In Jesus' name, amen.